Hessek case. However, as I watched events unfolding there, I was struck by the fact that the truly significant battle lines were being drawn in yet another country. They were significant not because they represented more in terms of dollars or human lives, but because they involved issues that went far beyond the materialistic goals that generally define empires. These battle lines extended beyond the armies of bankers, business executives, and politicians, deep into the soul of modern civilization. And they were being established in a country I had come to know and love, the one where I had first worked as a Peace Corps volunteer, Ecuador. In the years since I first went there, in 1968, this tiny country had evolved into the quintessential victim of the corporatocracy. My contemporaries and I, and our modern corporate equivalents, had managed to bring it to virtual bankruptcy. We loaned it billions of dollars so it could hire our engineering and construction firms to build projects that would help its richest families. As a result, in those 3 decades, the official poverty level grew from 50% to 70%. Under or unemployment increased from 15% to 70%. Public debt increased from $240 million to $16 billion. And the share of national resources allocated to the poorest citizens declined from 20% to 6%. Today, Ecuador must devote nearly 50% of its national budget simply to paying off its debts, instead of to helping the millions of its citizens who are officially classified as dangerously impoverished. The situation in Ecuador clearly demonstrates that this was not the result of a conspiracy. It was a process that had occurred during both Democratic and Republican administrations, a process that had involved all the major multinational banks, many corporations, and foreign aid missions from a multitude of countries. The United States played the lead role, but we had not acted alone. During those 3 decades, thousands of men and women participated in bringing Ecuador to the tenuous position it found itself in at the beginning of the millennium. Some of them, like me, had been aware of what they were doing, but the vast majority had merely performed the tasks they had been taught in business, engineering, and law schools, or had followed the lead of bosses in my mold, who demonstrated the system by their own greedy example, and through rewards and punishments calculated to perpetuate it. Such participants saw the parts they played as benign, at worst. In the most optimistic view, they were helping an impoverished nation. Although unconscious, deceived, and in many cases self-deluded, these players were not members of any clandestine conspiracy. Rather, they were the product of a system that promotes the most subtle and effective form of imperialism the world has ever witnessed. No one had to go out and seek men and women who could be bribed or threatened. They had already been recruited by companies, banks, and government agencies. The bribes consisted of salaries, bonuses, pensions, and insurance policies. The threats were based on social mores, peer pressure, and unspoken questions about the future of their children's education. The system had succeeded spectacularly. By the time the new millennium rolled in, Ecuador was thoroughly entrapped.